So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget podcast. I'm senior editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm reviews editor Sherlyn Lowe.
And today we are going to be diving into a grab bag of news, because last week we spent a lot of time diving into Microsoft's whole new service lineup. We kind of chewed up all our news. I'm still reviewing those things, but we've got some cool topics. I want to talk about Dell's new XPS models, the 15 and 17. Sherlyn's going to talk about ZocDoc becoming a telehealth facilitator. And I'm going to chat a bit about VR and work collaboration using VR. So that's pretty cool. As always, if you're enjoying the show, please subscribe to our podcast on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review, because that'll actually help us out with Apple's algorithms and all that fun stuff in the iTunes store. So I think it's safe to say, Sherlyn, that we both really like Dell's XPS line. I, in particular, Ooh. Love it. How do you feel?
Mama, I feel really...
Mama? Ooh, mama.
Mama.
Humada, humada, Dell's... humada.
Yeah, like, ooh. So, all right, I will say this. The reason I really like this year's XPS line is that whole, like, redesigned screen with the 16:10 aspect ratio. It's gorgeous. I still, like... Like, Dell was one of the first, if not the first company, to make that Infinity Edge display into its
They
laptops.
Were the first, yeah.
Yeah. And so, it, you know, it managed to do away with, like, very, very chunky bezels on all sides except for the bottom. And then when it did that to the top bezel, it had to, like, for a period of time, shift the webcam down to the bottom, which is a really dumb decision, but never mind.
Now it's a backup. They have a tiny webcam.
Yeah.
The webcam is back up to the top as of 2 years ago.
Exactly. Exactly, so which is nice. And theirs is Windows Hello capable too, which is pretty good.
So let me say what's new here, right?
Yes.
So this week they announced the XPS 15 and 17. It's been a while since we've had
it's
an
been
XPS
nearly
17,
10 years.
Actually. Yeah, nearly 10 years. But these are the new models with the modern design. And I talked about this when I reviewed the XPS 13. So go look up that review and you know that episode where we discussed that. But the whole idea is that, the bezels, left, right, top, and bottom, are now shaved down. You know, it sounds kind of superfluous, but I think it makes a huge difference. Because by removing that bottom bezel, they basically shifted the screen so that it's almost touching the keyboard. These computers look like they're nearly all screen, which is fantastic. So, yeah, they've got taller 16:10 displays, and it's just, like, really elegant. I really... dig it.
I think it takes looking at least a picture to kind of get it, because the whole idea of the Infinity Edge bezels too was that, like, you feel as if the display was floating in the air, sort of, right, if you open your lid. And this, but with the bottom bezel, it almost felt like, it's mostly floating, but now it really actually does look like just this big screen kind of hanging out in midair.
Yeah, like, it's futuristic in a way that I think we've always been leading towards. And let's not forget, like, after Dell gave us the Infinity Edge, literally every other PC maker, everyone did it. Everyone except Apple. Apple, like, slowly, they only, like, with the 16-inch MacBook Pro, they've sort of slimmed down their bezels.
Apple loves
its
bezels, you know, courage.
But not really. Yeah, courage. Well, that actually has to do with, like, the display technology and how Apple builds their screens. A couple of months ago, I talked about the history of our war on screen bezels and how Dell was involved with that, specifically on the PC side. It was a huge collaboration between Dell and Sharp, and, you know, we're seeing the fruits of that labor this year. So now we have the entire XPS line running, you know, modern hardware, the new Intel 10th gen CPUs, some decent GPUs on the 15 and 17 inch line. It's just nice. Like, they're really nice looking compact machines for their sizes. Do you have any thoughts about these new ones, Sherlyn?
I mean, in addition to that screen, I think it's also nice that they, like you said, there's good graphics options. They're very thin and light. They're just beautiful. And it's, for me, really nice to see a 17-inch version be revived, because I think there's been this...
back, baby. Yeah.
Back. It's back. For those of you who want, like, this, that one, I don't think it goes up to Quadro. Nothing as good as that. But in the 20 series of the GeForce RTX line.
Up to 2060.
Exactly.
Max key,
yeah.
Which is nice. Yeah.
Which is really, really nice. The 15-inch, you can go up to 1660, I believe, or around that series. And yeah, that's a lot of power. And that's what you want from a big machine. Obviously, I'm concerned about battery life with the bigger guy, the 17-inch one. But Dell's promising up to 25 hours on the Full HD Plus model of the 15-inch laptop. So that's a bold claim. We'll see. Mm-hmm. I did want to ask you, though, like Dell Dev.
Yeah.
what was like one of the challenges like preventing them from getting that bottom bezel so thin before? Like, what did they manage to do now, you think, that they got it down?
I think a lot of it, just in talking with their engineers, a lot of it was how they implement this display technology. Mm-hmm. And sometimes like they have to work with the panels that are available.
Yeah.
They have to deal with all sorts of like screen tech. And I think now they have, you know, first of all, they can get these 16 by 10 panels.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They can get a lot of cool tech in them because you still have Dolby Vision and
yes.
HDR and all that fun stuff. You know, I think it was just a matter of time making it happen. And, you know, last year's XPS 13, you know, it looked good. I really liked it. I talked about the 2-in-1, which is when they started moving over to this new modern design and removing that bottom bezel. But even the last years, there was still a Dell logo, you know, above the keyboard. There was still a bit of that bezel. And it was just like, it was a thing. It was like a visual thing that kind of took away from the seamlessness of the design. So anyway, I love where they're going. I love that they've kind of rounded out this whole new line.
Mm-hmm.
I don't as much love the new Area 51M. I reviewed the original one. This is the Alienware with desktop hardware. So it has a desktop CPU, has a basically a desktop GPU. And the whole idea of the Area 51M was that it was supposed to be upgradable. Upgradable in the way like a desktop was. You were supposed to be able to upgrade the CPU and the GPU and different components down the line. We have a new model this year. None of the components are backwards compatible to last.
Sad.
Year's.
That's
so,
sad.
Yeah, the entire purpose of the Area 51M is just like thrown out the window. Now, if you bought one of last year's and you wanted to upgrade to maybe a slightly faster NVIDIA GPU from last year, you still can. That's not much of an upgrade, and it kind of defeats the whole point of buying this machine. I don't know. And Dell hasn't really responded to complaints about this.
Yeah, why do you think they had to do that? Like, why do you think they can't make it upgradable anymore?
Honestly, go look at my review of the original Area 51M. It was kind of a mess. Like, as a machine, it was really unreliable, and maybe they had to make some optimizations in terms of, like, the actual upgrading sockets and platform and whatnot. But I'll tell you, I got within like 30 minutes of opening the Area 51M last year, a key flew off the keyboard and just like broke off. Like there was no way to just reattach it. So I had concerns about build quality and things like that. It was not great. I was really disappointed by that machine. And just on paper, I'm once again kind of disappointed by where they're going. This is going to be available in a 17-inch model, just like last time. So this is a big machine. It's a big honking thing meant, you know, for somebody who wants this amount of power.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I just don't think the viability is there. This thing weighs over 9 pounds.
Oof.
Yeah. Back when, you know, gaming laptops were huge and honking, I guess this would have been fine. Or for anybody who is okay, like wants to make the expandability bet and wants to pay more and live with a heavier laptop, even then, I don't quite know if it's going to work out because Dell hasn't proven that it will support these platforms. So that's annoying. Anyway, if you're looking for, you know, gaming laptops, look at the thin and light ones. Look at the ones under 5 pounds, and certainly look at the Asus Zephyrus G14 I reviewed a couple weeks ago, because that thing is a great deal and kind of like a great all-around vision of what a light gaming laptop could be today. It's not going to be as powerful as the Area 51M, but I think it's going to be a better value for a lot more people.
I mean, if you're looking for desktop-level gaming and in a laptop, I think, I don't know if that's like something that people want in a gaming industry, but it certainly sounds like a tower would get you a lot further. It's not as portable, obviously, but
yeah, I mean, that's the thing. Like, you're either going to, for somebody who wants to buy a tower or build a tower with the highest specs, you could do that for probably half the cost of this thing. So I just don't see the value proposition
Yeah.
And to me, that's the big issue that Dell is facing. So, yeah, that's all the Dell stuff. It's all very exciting. But I will tell you guys, my favorite thing whenever I see new hardware is to look at the last gen hardware and look for sales, look for refurbished mm-hmm. models, because you can get some pretty great deals. And the last batch of Dell's Alienware M series line and the last few XPS models have all been very good. So yes. Go get your deals.
Yeah. And one last note, I think, on gaming laptops is that there's plenty of brands to check out in addition to Asus, like Dev said. I think MSI has a good rep.
Yeah, I just reviewed the MSI GS66.
Yeah, MSI's pretty good. Yeah.
Pretty good,
There's a lot of other brands, too, that we're not as, like, up to speed on in terms of it. But, you know, Gigabyte, I think, is a mm-hmm. good brand as well. And, you know, there's just... And they're also thin and light and still very mm-hmm. powerful. You don't have to force yourself to use a giant honking machine just to get that kind of power.
Man, that is so 10 years ago. I don't... I feel so sad for Dell. I need to talk with some of these folks and just see what's up and see how they've made this model. And maybe they can make a bigger commitment to expandability down the line. Well, listeners, I'm definitely interested in hearing what you think of all of Dell's new hardware. Do you want a customizable laptop? Do you think a thin and light gaming laptop would be a little better? Or do you just want to stick with your gaming desktop? Shoot us a note at podcast@engadget.com. Whatever you send us, there's a very good chance we'll read it on air. So send us your great questions.
Also in news this week, ZocDoc is announcing that it's sort of becoming a telehealth facilitator. Now, ZocDoc is like a kind of a directory, in my opinion, for doctors. So you go there to look up, you know, doctors in your area. You can use it to make appointments and find a good doctor for whatever kind of specialty you need. And it used to just kind of be that search directory function, right? Like kind of like a Google for your medical professionals. But this mm-hmm. week, it announced that it's going to offer this thing called ZocDoc Video Service, and it's basically like an encrypted Zoom, right? Like a partner with Twilio, which the company mm-hmm. has partnered with before, and those are a communications platform. And it's offering this, a big deal here is that it's offering the service for free to any medical practitioner. So your doctor, if they're kind of a private practice or a smaller business, and they, you know, didn't want to sign on to these existing offerings for telehealth services before because of the cost, now they have this brand new free option to use. When I first read the pitch, I'll say this, they said, they were like, oh, our service is free. And my little innocent brain was like, you're offering free healthcare to people? I got excited for a second, but
we're not there yet. That would be certainly very cool.
I was like, oh my gosh, you're saying anyone with an internet connection can see a doctor for free? And I just was so excited. But it's not that, it's still a big deal because telehealth obviously is like the way forward for us. Mm-hmm. ZocDoc mm-hmm. itself told me that their online visits make up like 30-40% of their bookings now, as compared to, quoting the founder of ZocDoc, he said, essentially zero at the beginning of March, which is a lot. Like, that's a huge jump, and it shows that people are using it. So I don't know, Dev, like, do you think, have you taken a virtual doctor's visit since or before the pandemic started?
Well, yeah, actually, I'm a big ZocDoc customer. Mm. That has been, it's been the best service for me for finding doctors when I moved to New York.
Yeah.
And most recently, yeah, I've done up some calls, not through ZocDoc, but through other services for when I've had a cold. My wife uses it for a bunch of things, and our pediatrician has just sent us an email saying, like, yeah, you can have like a virtual baby doctor visit in case there are any issues. So everybody's getting into this. I think ZocDoc is in a perfect place to really take advantage of their platform because they've built up a good database of like doctors mm-hmm. and review scores and things like that. I've generally had good experience with doctors that I found via ZocDoc. I had one bad dentist experience in New York, like when I first moved here, which was like a guy that was like literally, it just felt like torture. Like it was not great. It was also a guy in a brownstone, so like his nurse assistants would also like, it's like, hey, we also have these rooms to rent as like this is our Airbnb room. So FYI, It's a very Brooklyn thing. Like, you really gotta, you know. But yeah, it was not great. So yeah, Sherlyn, what else have you heard about this platform?
So last month, the company introduced this filter, which allows you to search for providers offering telehealth appointments on their site. So before, because when I wrote my teletherapy piece a while ago when this all started, ZocDoc afterwards reached out and were like, oh yeah, you know, because at that point, ZocDoc didn't have a search filter specifically for video visits. And then they were like, oh yeah, thanks for mentioning us, but you know, we're working on this and it's going live soon. And I was like, okay, cool, but it's not live now.
Tell us, yeah.
so sorry, but I can't add it to my article when it's not available. And then they finally did, and then they now have announced this thing that they're hosting their own. And I think, yeah, you're right. They're super well positioned to do this, and it's free. I mean, I think they make a big deal about it being free, but it is important. I think there's other pieces and things to consider too. Like, well, you know, anyone can use it, which is nice. So you don't have to be a doctor on ZocDoc to use it. And what it looks like is just like Doxy, they'll send you a like unique link to your doctor's virtual waiting room. And then when your doctor's, you know, at your appointment time, you show up, your doctor takes you into a room and y'all talk over video. And the, I guess, like, it's very similar to Doxy in that way. And
you need a special platform to do this, right? Because it's special.
It has to
data.
Be HIPAA
it has
compliant.
To be encrypted. Yeah, it has to be HIPAA compliant. So yeah. You can't just do a Zoom chat with your doctor
on Skype
that's
or FaceTime.
Not real. Yeah.
That's not, yeah, absolutely. Like, if there were, and I don't know for sure that there are, but there might have been doctors who were like skirting around regulations.
Oh, sure.
I'm
sure like the very fancy like personal doctors, the one rich people get, I'm sure they will like Zoom and be on demand and like text and everything.
Yeah.
For us normal people, we can beg and plead to get some sort of remote assistance. Yeah.
But if they were, you know, using that before, now they have a free option. There's really no real excuse to still be using the non-HIPAA compliant, non-encrypted options. And I think that, you know, we're moving towards a world where all the pandemic's making a lot of these things possible, right? I think that HIPAA compliance is now, I think, more attainable for a lot of these services, or like it's more of a priority for the people who are looking at granting HIPAA compliance to things to assess these features, because now there's such a great need for it.
And also, like, the idea of HIPAA compliance has to, it's also being upgraded to support these things too, because they didn't have a way of, you know, making sure video chats are secure until recently.
Yeah. Like, what do you mean by like protecting my video calls? You know, like now they're like, oh, because, you know, make sure it's encrypted, make sure it's like super secure. And so, yeah, I mean, I think that this will leave a lot of like a big impact on our healthcare infrastructure moving forward. You know, we'll get to this later, but I'm working on a little bit of a bigger story around this. I'm excited to start the research for it. So I don't know. It's great. I've somehow become our health reporter, which is fun.
It is. It's fun to think like, yeah, we are stepping into telehealth. What about VR telehealth?
Charlene? VR health, dude.
VR health. I don't know. I feel like we're getting there. So this week I tested out Spatial, which is a VR collaboration platform. We wrote them 2 years ago. And this is a company that's been doing stuff for a while, but they've mainly focused on businesses, you know, like Fortune 500 companies and whatnot. They let you take VR meetings. And previously, they were built for like HoloLens and the more expensive AR headsets. This week, they announced they're going to make their platform free. And they're also giving you access to their virtual meetings on web browsers and on iPhone and Android. So anybody could be in a virtual meeting. And they're also opening up support to the Oculus Quest, which is, you know, one of the most popular VR headsets right now. So I took a meeting. I was looking at a window, like just peering into this virtual room. It was actually being rendered in the cloud, like a cloud gaming solution, and being streamed to my browser. So it wasn't even hitting my PC's resources, which seems cool. Like, this is a useful feature for people with low powered machines who may need to get into a VR, you know,
was
session.
The latency good?
It was fine. Yeah, it felt like a video chat. The actual performance, it felt like 15 frames per second. Like, the 3D didn't look that great.
Yeah.
But I could still see everything. I could still talk to everybody. And it's pretty clear that they're going after, like, the Zoom-esque market.
Yeah.
The world is working remotely now, and Zooms are fine. But it's not like being in a place with somebody. After I tried out the web stuff, I put on my Oculus Quest, I jumped into the room, and I was like standing next to the CEO and several executives from Spatial, and we could have a conversation.
Was it incredibly awkward? It sounds awkward.
It's a little awkward, but I mean, so is like random video chats with all these companies. You know, I think any tech briefing is like a little awkward. But yeah, I was able to make like a little avatar of myself. I took a webcam photo and it, like, mapped my face onto this 3D model. So when I was in VR, that's what was moving around. Like, I didn't have legs. I was just like a chest and arms and head like floating around, and everyone else was too. And this avatar, you know, for something that I took with just a webcam photo, it looks pretty good. It actually mapped my glasses on. It's not like a high polygon PlayStation 3 render. Maybe something like a PlayStation 2 model where you could definitely see who I am. You could make out my face.
Is it like...
You could make out my expressions, which is nice.
Is it like they printed your face onto a wrapping paper and then wrapped it
basically
around? Okay, gotcha.
Basically, but what's really cool is that Spatial's CEO and their chief product officer, they've had like full 3D renders of their faces, so they were able to like produce much higher quality models that actually look like them. So that possibility is there. I believe the lips move a little when they talk, like... You get a sense of like body language. You can see how people are moving as their hands are moving. Certainly, we've looked at things like 3D cameras and smartphones that could map 3D spaces and objects. I could see using something like that eventually. And the cool thing is, like, in this virtual world, you can do all sorts of stuff. You could bring in 3D objects, you can manipulate them, you can work on them together. I think for companies that do things, especially around like pre-rendered products and stuff, like where you're looking at like the render of a book bag and the design of a book bag in virtual world, you can pan around, you can collaborate on it, you can like jot down some notes about the design. So it's not like being next to somebody, but I do think it's very close, and it's closer than just a video chat. So I really enjoyed that. We did one thing where we jumped into a life-size rendering of like a mobile phone store. And we were able to see, like, oh, the products are lined up here. We have some signage here. And then, like, with the hit of a button, he was able to shrink it down. So we were looking at it from above. So there's, like, a lot of flexibility and cool new stuff you could be doing in VR. I know not everybody has VR headsets. I just think this is really cool. I would love to take more product briefings in this sort of space. I'm sure we're going to see some really cool uses of VR moving forward. I just think it's really cool that Spatial just kicked open their platform for free, you know, to see what happens. Yeah.
I still think, and you've sort of said this, which is like, it's not going to completely replace in person. It's a nice substitute. I do think that it still sounds kind of awkward. It's not the version of VR meetings that we are shown in Upload, right? Upload has this like fully perfect, fully rendered, fully controllable.
We don't have photorealistic VR yet.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll get there.
But this might be a first step towards that. but you do make a good point that like collaborative work around these sort of model things that are 3D would be better over VR than in Zoom, I guess. I wanted to take one of these. They actually, another one of their reps through the Qualcomm side of things reached out to me to see if I would be interested in taking this Spatial thing too. And
we can record a podcast in VR.
In VR.
At some point. How about that? And just try not to hit our mics with headsets. But it's a cool thing. It's a very cool thing. I think there's a lot of focus in VR, because the thing about Zoom meetings is that it's easy to navigate to another web browser.
Yes,
it's easy to like ignore the person you're podcasting with, for example. It's easy to just like disregard and like go off and do your own thing, because it's just like one window in your multi-windowed desktop. So I do think just being stuck in VR, you know, being under a headset, being forced to look at your colleagues and other people in a room, there's a level of focus here that you don't get with just a video chat meeting. So I think like, you could collaborate on a whiteboard together, which is something you can already do in Spatial. You can go through slides together. If we were like redesigning our website, you could put up a giant image of the new design and like really dive into it. So I think there's certainly benefits to being focused, and that's something we miss in the complete like telehealth world. There's so many distractions. Most people don't have like dedicated office spaces. if you had a VR headset, even if you were just in your dining room or in your living room, you would be in a new space. Like, it actually feels like you're going somewhere else, which is, to me, that alone is like, there's a psychological benefit to that.
I mean, so having done a little bit of research about therapy in general, I mean, they, you know, therapists design their offices very carefully, right?
Yeah.
The space has to be non-triggering. There should be fewer distractions. And the good thing about having that VR environment is that now when we're doing teletherapy visits from home, we don't often have the time to find a clutter-free space to do that. Or your kid's in the next room screaming and
I could just imagine like a virtual... Like, also, it would be, like, in a serene, like, do you want to be on the beach?
Imagine that,
Do you want to be floating above the trees?
In
you
the
could
spa.
Do all sorts of stuff. Yeah.
I miss
that
a
would
spa.
Be cool.
But
I'm totally down with
that. I will say the one thing that gets me a little slightly concerned about, like, being in, doing therapy in VR is that, like, you, another key component of a therapist's office is tissues. So, like,
because it doesn't work. It does
people do kind of cry in therapy sessions, and
you cannot cry.
You
there's
cannot
no
cry into your goggles
in VR.
I feel like that would be extra sad.
Channeling Tom Hanks here. There is no crying in VR.
But yeah, so maybe not the most intense. Maybe it's more a relaxation tool rather than a self-progress kind of a therapy.
I'll tell
session.
You, I've definitely cried in VR just because. First of all, those screens are very bright and my eyes are a little light sensitive. So you tear up. You do tear up. Like when I was playing Half-Life Alyx for like 12 to 20 hours, I spent 20 hours in that game. My eyes, like you get a little sweaty. You get a little teary.
Yes.
There's a lot of stuff happening. Certainly these headsets need to adapt to something like this. I do think, like, I can imagine the telehealth with an AR headset, something like the HoloLens, where maybe your therapist is just sitting in, like, a chair in a corner of your actual room. That could be kind of interesting, too. So, yeah, there's a lot of flexibility here. Spatial is tech that works in both VR and AR.
Oh.
Spatial also supports Nreal's AR goggles, which are these super cool, like, they look like sunglasses, but they... Apparently, from our hands-on, Richard Light viewed those at CES. They are pretty decent. Like, they give off a nice resolution. And it seems like something that could give, like, the Magic Leap 1 a run for its money.
Mm.
Magic Leap not making consumer stuff anymore, so we really have to look to these other companies like Nreal. And speaking of, like, next-generation products, one of our managing editors, James True, over in Spain, reviewed the Neuraloop, which is a pair of wireless earbuds with noise canceling. They're really interesting. And he also looked at Neuraloop's other headphones a couple years ago. They're cool because they like map your ear space and create like a custom audio design for your ears. So it's all about personalized sound. And as somebody with very strange ears who has issues with a lot of normal little headphones, I think that's really compelling.
Yeah.
And James seems to really like these things. And I dig them too. They're not completely wireless earbuds. They're sort of the necklace design, like Apple's Beats X and some of the others. But I've talked about how much I miss that design. There is something a little more convenient to those. And I want to get these. They have noise canceling. They apparently sound pretty decent. They've got a whole bunch of features. And you can even plug in. You can plug in a 3.5 millimeter jack. Apparently. So they use like a unique charging cable, and in that cable is something to plug in the lining cord, which I'm very excited about. So these are like super flexible. These are wireless earbuds you could take on a plane and still whenever we're back on planes and still like plug them into the, you know, onboard entertainment system and watch a movie or something, which you can't easily do with most other wireless earbuds. I normally walk around in my book bag with a 3.5 millimeter cable for when I'm traveling. I think some smart people also have, like, you could use a Bluetooth transmitter on an airplane and plug that in, but I've not had good luck with that. I'm really digging these. They look cool. They look weird and futuristic, and I think that's pretty awesome. So go check out James True's review of the Neuraloop.
So this week I'm working on, you know, more grab bag news stuff, but I'm also doing a bunch of research into telehealth and how that's all going to change moving forward. I'm interviewing a bunch of people, not only in the telehealth space like ZocDoc, but also, you know, medical professionals. So if you have thoughts on, you know, what you think might be the future, feel free to hit us up. What are you working on, Dev?
I'm still elbow deep, neck deep in Microsoft products. So my Surface Go review went up earlier this week. Mm-hmm. It is, as disappointing as we talked about in our episode last week. I scored it a 79. Not quite something I'd recommend, but it has its uses for some people. People are definitely tearing me apart in the comments, which, hey, sure, whatever.
It came for me last week, too. It's all right.
It's fun. I'm currently reviewing the Surface headphones and earbuds, which I'm really digging. I discovered an actual issue with the Surface earbuds, though, which I hope they can actually fix. So I'm somebody who really likes to wear one earbud when I have wireless earbuds like this. If I'm like doing the dishes or taking care of the baby, I don't need two earbuds in, right? If I'm listening to a podcast, I just need like one. But apparently, for some reason, the Surface earbuds have some sort of connection between the actual earbuds. So if I walk too far away from the other bud, I start to lose reception, which is the weirdest thing. Like, even if I'm holding my phone in my hand, it starts to act like it's losing Bluetooth reception from the phone. It's wild.
That is weird.
It's completely wild because modern smart earbuds don't do that. They have direct connections to the phone. Each earbud connects directly to the phone, right? Mm. In the first generation of products, like the Jabra's 65T, those only one bud would connect to your phone, and then the other bud would kind of hop the connection from that bud and kind of share it. That shouldn't be the case like at this point in time in 2020. So I've pinged Microsoft. I really hope they can fix this with a software update because they actually sent me another pair. So I've replicated the problem like completely exactly. That is not good. I hope they can fix that. But otherwise, they sound pretty good. And the Surface headphones, too, are very nice. Like, they both focus on comfort in a way that I don't think a lot of other companies think about. So I'm really digging that. And I have the Surface Book 3 in as well for review and testing. And we'll see how that matches up benchmark-wise. I'm not a fan of kind of how underpowered it is compared to a lot of other systems, but maybe there's a use that we could find for these things.
Maybe. I mean, it looks nice in all the pictures that people have been posting.
They certainly look nice. And the same for the Surface Go. It certainly looks nice, even if it has an underpowered CPU and not enough RAM.
I will say, you said the commenters came for you last week. There were some very angry people all up in my whatever channels. And they were like, look, I know you don't think people use 15-inch tablets that are underpowered, but I love my underpowered 15-inch tablet. I'm like, dude.
Yeah, you do you, but, you know,
why torture yourself? Why? When there are better options out there. You're like the person stuck in an abusive relationship that doesn't want to get out.
Okay, time for fun stuff. Yeah. I've been watching The Midnight Gospel, which is this weird new Netflix show. It's by Pendleton Ward, the guy behind Adventure Time. And it definitely has his imagination. And the concept of it is pretty wild, too, because it's about like kind of a slacker alien dude living in an RV who hosts a podcast. And he has like this he has a machine to explore the multiverse and to explore like different universes and different planets.
Doctor Who.
Yeah, sort of. It's sort of like Doctor Who. If Doctor Who was just like a conversational podcast, so he will go somewhere that's having like a zombie apocalypse and he'll talk to the president who's played by Dr. Drew, I believe. But he'll just say, hey, you want to interview, you know, for my podcast? And amid the zombie epidemic, they will have a conversation about, you know, the meaning of life and relationships. It's kind of funny. It's really funny. I think it's really deep and interesting. I think it could get a bit navel-gazing at times, and it's certainly a show that's kind of made for you to watch under the influence of something, because it's just wild. There's one episode of a planet of attacking murderous clowns. There's a lot of stuff happening, but I really like the conversations.
Fun.
It's fun. I think you'd really enjoy it, Sherlyn. It will probably give you nightmares at night because it's... You know, it's an animated show. It really taps into the full power of like weird animated art.
Yeah.
So I love every aspect of it right now. That's my current jam. I'd recommend it to anybody, especially if you like podcasts that just kind of ramble on and, you know, discuss the meaning of life and deeper things like that.
Well, I am not the biggest fan of animated shows, but I will give it a check. Meanwhile, I don't have an Asian foreign film to recommend this week, but I do have something that's foreign. It's the Belgian TV series called Into the Night, and it's on Netflix. You might have seen it trending at some point last week, which is what got me to start watching it, and it's incredible. It's 6 episodes. It's about these people in an airplane trying to escape some kind of disease being caused by the sun. It's incredible. I mean the pacing is great. It's like really fast. The drama unfolds really quickly. But my favorite thing about this show, so I watched it with a friend, and my favorite thing we were talking about is it makes you question what you would do in a situation like this in such a way that, I mean, a lot of shows do that, right? But in a way that like, it forces you to consider your decision. So in like every character in the show, they present as either good or bad at the start, and then you make certain decisions about their life and whether they should stay in the group or something like that in, as a viewer, and you make judgment calls, and then afterwards it shows.
Wait, is it interactive?
It's not, but in your head, like it's in the way the story is told, you're
because they have some interactive shows, like there's more interactive stuff coming to Netflix. Yeah.
They do, and I'm looking forward to that, but this one, it really forces you to, it made me, I was like, yeah, we should ditch this girl like at the start of the show, and then towards the end, that girl turns out to be really useful. And I'm like, oh crap,
man.
I would have died if I like had not, you know, like it's, and everyone, you know, it makes you consider what your moral boundaries are. Would you forgive a rapist? Would you forgive a thief? Would you you know, like such a good like exercise in considering your own moral system and beliefs. So check it out. If I mean, again, just for the drama, it's already very good, but like if you're a deep thinker like I sometimes am, you might enjoy it too.
No comment.
And that's it for our show this week, everyone. Thank you as always for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own managing editor Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter, and I podcast about movies and TV at the /filmcast@slashfilm.com.
If you want to shoot me some deep thoughts about morality, I'm at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us at podcast@engadget.com, leave us a review on iTunes, and subscribe on your podcatcher of choice, including Spotify. No, I'm talking about Avatar: The Last Airbender movie.
The movie.
One with the kid, yeah.
What is wrong with you?